to Planetary Spirit, coming to you on ETIN, Emerson Talk and Information Network. My name is Jeff Ferranini, and I invite you on an exploration of spirituality. And my guest today is Bruce Rosen. Let me tell you a little bit about Bruce Rosen. He is an investment officer at a major financial firm by day, and Bruce F. Rosen is a writer by night. An award-winning writer as early on as high school, Bruce has written professionally for over three decades and been featured in such publications as the San Francisco Chronicle and the San Francisco Examiner. In addition to a stint as a journalist in Chinatown, he has crafted essays on sports, politics, economics, and music. The piece that he wrote on his boyhood idol, Sandy Koufax, appeared in the Baseball Hall of Fame, and his series of slice of life pieces included one that focused on Princess Diana, aired on the BBC. He is also the author of a book entitled, If You Ever Need Me, I Won't Be Far Away. So it is indeed a pleasure to welcome today to Planetary Spirit, Bruce Farrell Rosen. Hey, Bruce, how are you?
I'm well, Jeff. How are you? You're in, up there in Boston?
Out here in Boston, and you're out there on the Golden Gate part of the western part of this wonderful continent we're on here.
Exactly. I'm looking at it. The clouds are moving in. We're ready for a few days of rain. Looking out, actually, over the Golden Gate Bridge as we speak.
So obviously, you must have left your heart somewhere.
it stays in San. Yeah, I can go many places, but it always definitely it's in my heart's in San Francisco, no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, this is quite an undertaking, and there's so many words I want to use for this book. Honesty, integrity, family. Even the word heroicism comes up at times for me. And there's also this beautiful energy of spirit that does imbue this book in various places, and that's what I'm hoping that we'll focus on today. But before we get into any of this, I did ask if you would be willing to read from your introduction to this book, If You Ever Need Me, I Won't Be Far Away. That I think puts this book into a little bit of a perspective for us. So if you would, Bruce, would you read that?
Yes, Jeff. I appreciate the opportunity to do that. As the story unfolds, I sought to understand myself through memory, but to also understand memory through being true to the self that I am today. I strive for honesty in the present and the past. This is a book of philosophy, understanding our actions, their cause and effect against the notion of free will or determinism. We discover Eastern philosophy, spirituality, premonition, love of family, loyalty of friendship, loss, hope, belief, redemption, paying a price for choices, the joy of sport, music, and the desire to understand the events that unfold around us during these tumultuous times. It is a book that strives to understand responsibility, personal boundaries, the notion of regret, and whether it is necessary to regret. Ultimately, it is a book about joy, the memory of joy, the joy that we carry with us, joy in the present. Ultimately, I believe this book is guided by simple love. My hope for readers is that they will rediscover themselves, perhaps understand themselves through memory, and heal their wounds as they read these pages.
Well, thank you. So, okay, really what this book is about, and what the title anyway refers to, is this extraordinary woman who was your mother, who is Alma Rush Rosen, or Alma Lorraine Rush Rosen.
Mm-hmm.
And she really figures into your life in very prominent ways. But what I think people need to understand is that this book really covers almost 2 years of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's 2006 to 2008, somewhere in that area.
Yep.
And at that time, you're a married man, successful in your business as a financial bond trader. And you're married with two children, Jonathan and Michael, and you're living in San Francisco. And you've been married, you're around 50 years of age. And there's this...
At that time, yeah.
Yeah. There's this ennui, there's this something that you can't really name that's been pulling at you, and you're not sure what to do with it, but you don't feel that you and your wife of 25 years or so are really as close as you could be, and something's missing for you.
Mm-hmm.
And into the picture, out of the clear blue sky, comes this woman, M, who you, one of your sons is becoming very well accomplished in music, and you decide you're going to buy him a Steinway piano. And you are in New York on a business trip, and you bump into this woman who's one of the people that sells pianos at Steinway. And what happens there?
What happens is actually that it had been prearranged to meet this person. I wanted to buy my son a Steinway. He was he had graduated high school and had given a stirring Shostakovich piece for the high school commencement, and he had been accepted to go to music to enter the music program at the Oberlin Conservatory of Music, and I was extremely proud of him. And I wanted to do something so special for him, and I looked at Steinway pianos, and he was going off to a summer program. I looked at Steinway pianos here in San Francisco, and didn't really see, I saw some, but didn't actually find anything I specifically wanted. And so he was going off to a music camp in New Hampshire for part of that summer, and I decided that, you know, we would go out, we were going to go out and visit him. And so when I heard that you could buy a Steinway at the Steinway, directly at Steinway, and not have to, apparently they would, you wouldn't be paying the sales taxes on it there. It was a big, big savings given the price of the given the price of the Steinway. So I thought, okay, well, he's going to go to New Hampshire. Fate intervened in another way as well. I have family in London, and I like to go visit them. And I was going to go to London and then stop in New Hampshire and originally buy the Steinway here. But there were the terrorist bombings, as you'll read in the book. There were the terrorist bombings in London, and the subways were, it was a state of panic there, as you'll, I'm sure, remember. And my cousin, who I was planning to visit in London, said, "Bruce, this is probably not the time to go." And so he said, "Come another time, but there's just a panic and fear here now, and you're just probably not going to have a great time." So when I heard that, I thought, okay, I'll make my plans to go to New York instead. I'll look for the Steinway, and from there, rather than coming from London to go to New Hampshire, I'll come from New York to go to New Hampshire. And I had set up an appointment with this woman who had a charming personality on the telephone, bubbly and charming, and she was humorous and liked to engage you, and, you know, it was a great sales tactic. And we had made a plan to, for her to show me. She was going to take a day off of work, but she thought, since you're coming so far to look at pianos, I'll be there for you. And we looked at pianos, and there was a I fought against it, but there was this really strong magnetism and chemistry. I mean, it occurred on the phone, and it just became more intense, you know, in person. And so we talked and joked, and I actually had a ticket to go see a play that night, the big play from which a movie was made, if you recall. Doubt was the name of the play.
Right, with Meryl Streep, sure.
Exactly. Yeah, well, they made the movie with Meryl Streep, and I can't remember who was in the play, but it was extremely well done, yeah. and serious play. And a friend of mine, a client of mine, actually, who lives in New Jersey, called me that day and said, "God, I'm really sorry. I'm not going to be able to make it." So I received that call as we were toward the end of looking at Steinway pianos, and so I said to this person, I said, "I've got an extra ticket to the this play Doubt, and let me know if you'd like to go."
So let's just take it from there. So
yeah.
What the book revolves around is that M, this mysterious woman, really gets under your skin and really deep in your soul. You don't know why you're drawn to her so much.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
And she becomes the catalyst to you then starting to look at your marriage in new ways and realizing, actually, over a series of months, because you then are traveling to New York, you're having conversations with them practically daily,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, something is just calling here that is so deep, and you don't really understand it. And throughout this book, that wrestling is taking place, and then at some point, you make the decision that you're going to let go of him because you just don't feel that this is fair to your wife, Sue.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fair to M, and it's not really fair to you. And you make this horrendous choice to let go of M.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found fascinating was your wife, Sue, and mm-hmm. here again we get your mother,
mm-hmm.
Alma Rose, coming in, who we haven't probably said this, but she's a psychic tea leaf reader.
Right.
And there's just this mysterious, mysterious quality about her. She was a bathing beauty. She won some kind of title very early on when she was 18 or 19, like Miss Montreal, because she was from Canada.
Toronto. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's something about her. And so Sue has not been told anything about M at
mm-hmm.
this point,
mm-hmm.
and you're like just, you know, not sure what to do, how to break this to her, you know,
mm-hmm.
what's going on, and mm-hmm. Sue has this dream.
Exactly. yes, and I'll go from there. I'm very perceptive, Jeff, on the on the pickup of that crucial moment. It really is a powerful moment, and oftentimes people really don't pick up on that moment in the book, and that is actually the first person I've done interviews in the past, you know, and nobody's actually ever asked that question. It's really one of the most important, poignant moments in the book. Yeah, Sue, we wake up in the morning, and I am, as you say, wrestling with how am I, you know, I can't carry this on, I can't live these two lives. And the communication with M is primarily over the phone, and it's powerful, and it's intense, and it's overwhelming, and it's just you're right. I'm drawn, and I can't quite figure out why or what or whatever, and something is at work here. So Sue, the next one morning, wakes up and says, "I want to talk to you about something. I had a dream last night." And as soon as she said that, I knew that, I just knew that she picked up something about this relationship, because Sue is a very intuitive person in her own right. It was interesting how we met. Perhaps we can come back to that at a later point. But she said, "I had this dream last night, and it's unbelievable, and it was very incredible and intense. Your mother came to me," she said. your mother came to me in a dream, and my mom and Sue did have a connection. And she said, remember, my mom had passed by this point. She didn't call Sue. She came to her in a dream. And she said, your mother came to me, and she told me that you were in a very, very deep relationship with a woman, and that it was more spiritual than anything else, and that it was deep and connected, and for me not to worry about it, because at some point you will break it off. But it's important that I know and understand that she knows and understands, Sue, that is, the nature of this, that it's going on, and how to act about it. And I'm just totally, you know, totally flabbergasted and, you know, blown away by this dream. And I own up and I say, well, I start to say, well, yeah, you know, I try to sort of beat around the bush in the beginning. And I say, well, yeah, there's this person, you know, that, you know, whenever I go to London, we go out to a play. And then I said, no. And she looks at me, that's not the truth. She knows that's not the truth. She knows it's a lot more serious than that. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, yeah. And there's this person I met, and then, you know, even though Sue had been, and I explained the situation, that it's powerful, it's charismatic, it's intense, it's connected, and it's, you know, it's intoxicating, and, you know, and all of that. And she asked me, well, am I in love with this person? I said, I can't say, I don't know what it is. I don't know. I've only met her a couple times, but we speak on the phone often. Well, at that point, Sue could have done one or two things. I mean, she could have been understanding and said, let's work through it, but she didn't go in that direction.
Yeah.
She really went, went through an enormous amount of hurt and pain and anger and upset and hostility and insecurity.
Let's hold it right there.
Yeah.
So you're meeting M in New York on occasion to go to a play, and you're talking all the time. But I think the important point is for people to understand is you've never slept with this woman.
No.
You've never even possibly kissed this woman.
Right. I did have a kiss with her, but never slept with her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's this incredible hunger, but it's really almost something that awakens in you and says to you, Bruce, you need to look at your life. And really, that is the basis of this book. There's this wrestling, this internal wrestling that's going on in such an honorable way, because you have these other brushes with these other women and these opportunities and possibilities, and you never take advantage of them.
Right.
You just say, no, I've got to honor my marriage until I figure out where I stand here.
Exactly right.
And so this is such a powerful book for anybody who is doing this kind of wrestling internally in their souls in an honorable way to look at, you know, what do I do in my life? Where do I go? How do I move forward? And now I would love to have you, again, bring in the ghost of Alma, Alma Rush Rosen, and how she brought to your attention that there was, you're what, 20 years of age or so, and you say to your mother, gee, I'd like to have a tea leaf reading. And she goes,
yeah, she would give me readings now and then. I was a little older than that. I think I must have been, let me just think for a moment, would have been 70, about 24.
Okay.
24 years of age, and I was attending graduate school up in here in San Francisco, And I would go home. My mom lived in the upper, you know, not the, quite the desert, but north of Los Angeles. And she had this home that her father had bought for her. You know, she never would have had the money to do it, but her father bought her this home before he passed on. Overlooking the mountains and the upper desert, and it was this beautiful, beautiful, sunny, early summer day. I was finishing my first year of grad school up in San Francisco, and I said, "Mom, let's do a tea leaf reading. You know, it's a perfect time." And we go out in the backyard, and it was probably late morning, maybe just afternoon, and it was not extremely hot, but it was warming up. The air was dry. The sprinklers had just been on, and the green grass was sparkling, you know, from the sprinklers. And we sat out on her, you know, on the chairs out there near the barbecue, and her customary beginning to a reading was, you know, twirl your cup three times and make a wish. And so I did that, and she goes immediately into the cup, and she empties out, she hits her hand, her palm against the cup, and empties out the tea leaves. And she says, "I know exactly what you're wishing for." She says, "You're wishing to meet the person you're going to one day marry." And she said, "Well, it's very clear, it's just on the verge of happening. It's the person you're meant to be with and that you will marry." And she said, and she pointed out to me the tea in the cup, hearts and cupids and hearts everywhere, Valentine hearts and cupids, and I could see them clearly. It was amazing. And she said, "But I want to tell you, you'll not be able to find this person on your own. She's going to have to find you. And so I know you want to go look for her and all of that, and after this reading you're going to try to wonder where, you know, how you can get her, but you're not going to find her. She's going to have to find you in some way. And it's going to happen sometime soon." So I said to her, "Well, describe what she looks like if you can. You know, tell me what she looks like." And she said, "Well, the woman or the young woman will be light-complected, blue eyes, or light eyes, blondish hair, light complected." She said, "You know, she's going to be very smart, but in a very different way from you. I mean, you're more of the artsy, you know, side and philosophical. She's going to be very scientific, you know, more on that side," the way she put it. And she said, "And her parents will like you very much, and her father will like you particularly, and he'll be a quiet man, you know, you're sort of a shy man, but he will take to you very well." I said, "Okay." I said, "Go on." And she said, "But remember, you're not going to be able to find her. She'll find you." And so I said, "Okay." And then she talked about some other things in the reading, about my education, my work, what I was doing, and what was going to happen in that way, and a few other things, which I can't remember. I mean, this is the main thing I remember. I remember it better than I can remember my name, even sometimes. She said, I said, "Okay, tell me who the, can you tell me your name? Can you give me a name?" And she said, she looked, and she didn't think for very long. She said, "Sue, S-U-E, Sue." I said, "Okay." I said, "Well, I'm dating a Suzette or a Suzanne, but she's dark-complected." She says, "No, it's not her. She's not dark-complected. You haven't met her yet. And just remember, you'll meet her, but you can't find her." And that, she put the cup down. Any more questions, which she would always customarily say, and I may have had a question or two. And so then, fast forward.
Well, wait a minute. We're gonna just cut that right there, mm-hmm. and then we'll come back for the next half,
mm-hmm.
okay? Because we're gonna take a short break now, and I'm just gonna remind people that you're listening to Planetary Spirit. This is Jeff Ferranini, and we're talking today with my guest Bruce Farrell Rosen, who is the author of "If You Ever Need Me, I Won't Be Far Away." So, Bruce, will you stay on the line with us?
Absolutely.
Okay, excellent. So we're going to take a short break, and we will be right back, so stay tuned.
Some say love, it is a river that runs the tender reed. Some say love, it is a razor that leaves your soul.
Welcome back to Planetary Spirit. This is Jeff Fiorinini, and we're talking with my guest today, Bruce Farrell Rosen, who is the author of If You Ever Need Me, I Won't Be Far Away. So welcome back, Bruce.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Bruce, I wanted to see if you would do another reading, and that's right in the front of the book, and that is what your son, I believe, Michael, has to say about Lorraine Rose, who is your mother. If you would read that. And while you're looking for that, I'd like to let people know that what we just listened to during the break was a cut entitled The Rose, and the vocals were by Scotty Haskell, and that was written by Amanda McBroom. So
beautiful, beautiful piece there at the break.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
So, yeah, this is written by my son Michael, who actually was the musician that you know, for whom I was looking for that piano. He has since graduated from grad school and is in New York City. called Michael's quote. I see her best when I close my eyes. She was Alma to a few, Lorraine to many, and grandmother to me. I sit, eyes closed, and concentrate. As 1 minute becomes 10, and 10 become one. She was Alma the girl, Alma the woman, Alma the lover, Alma the mother. And she was Lorraine the seer, Lorraine the healer, Lorraine the mystic, Lorraine the intangible. It is no surprise she resides in this place where the empirical flirts with the spiritual. Sometimes I'll see her when I'm in an elevator, or while I'm walking, or when I'm preoccupied. She is disguised as rosebuds and smoke, a scent she inhabited in life and clung to in death. This smell, perhaps ordinary to many, awakens my potential and purpose. It is my mantra, my catalyst, perpetuating cycles of thought, leading back to that one brief moment.
Yeah, thank you. Really lovely. And that is about this woman that we're talking about, this woman, Tea Leaf Reader. And just for people to understand, when Bruce and his mother, his brother, and his sister were all living in California, Alma, Lorraine Rose, did readings for, 20, 30, 40, 50 people a day.
Sometimes, sometimes certainly above 20.
And this
sometimes,
was,
yeah.
And this was her
draining.
Her main form of work for most of her life.
Right.
And the interesting thing was that she was in contact with some of the highest echelons of Hollywood and around the world. People would fly in to have readings with her. And there's this one point in the book where you come into the house, and she's kind of smiling, and you say, Mom, what's going on? And she says, nothing, don't worry about it.
Right.
But you know something's up, and so you kind of persist, and she finally says, you know where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah.
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 Go ahead.
Yeah, it was a break from grad school. I'd gone out to have some beers with some friends, and it was rather late. Excuse me. And I come in, and, you know, I'd been gone all day, and I'd just gotten back, and normally she'd be extremely excited to see me. And she's just chuckling on the phone, you know, obviously in a deeply involved conversation, and she was having fun. You could see the conversation was sort of closer to the end than the beginning. And but she continues on in this conversation, and I said, you know, so fine, you know, I come over to her, and she kind of pushes me away. I'll be there in a minute. So I let her go on, and finally she hangs up, and I say, so what's that about? You were really involved in that conversation, Mom. And it looked like you were having fun. And she says, well, Marlon Brando just asked me out on a date. And I said, really? I said, how? Why? How's that happening? And she said, well, I've been reading him, and I met him a couple times, and I've been helping him, you know, with his love life. And there was a particular person that he was very interested in that was, I guess, giving him a difficult time or something. And she said, yeah, he asked me out on a date. He just asked me out on a date. And I said, well, are you going to do it or what? You know, and she said, no, I can't do that. I won't do that. You know, now my mom was not married at that time. I mean, she was, my father had left, you know, when I was about 16, and they never came back together. So she was in this house, and she continued to read them apparently for quite a while after that.
I mean, so she was involved with some very heavy duty people, but of course, Lorraine Rose, being the type of tea leaf reader that she was, she also would work very diligently with the people who had no money to pay her.
Absolutely.
And take care of them as well. So let's get back to that story now. Your mother has told you you're going to meet this woman, Sue, not Susan, not Suzette.
Right.
And that you're not going to be the one who's going to make this connection. She's going to make it happen.
Right.
So you say that there are, in the book, you say there's this word, and I can't remember it exactly, but it's something like there are unannounced angels that come into our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And you say in two instances, these unannounced angels come in. And they both had to revolve around this roommate you had, Jeff.
Right.
And I think you're living in San Francisco at the time.
Right.
And
right.
You have this apartment with this roommate, Jeff, and
right.
somehow or another, it works out that Jeff gets his own phone line, and you
right.
get this other phone line, which is, I think, a newer phone line.
And, exactly.
And somehow, you're home, you're about to leave somewhere, but mm-hmm. you decide, no, you kind of have to hang out for a minute or two. The
right.
phone rings, Jeff can't get it because it's on your phone, you
Got it.
Answer it. And what happens?
Yeah, so this is a new phone. Jeff had a music business. He was a guitarist going to the Conservatory of Music in San Francisco. We moved up here together. We'd been friends a long time. And Jeff had connected. While I was down in to visiting my mom and had that reading, Jeff had, and I knew in advance, Jeff was going to get his own phone, and he was going to have one installed for me. So I had never used that phone before. It was brand new. I'd never been on it. And I come back to my apartment, our apartment up in the Haight-Ashbury, the infamous Haight-Ashbury district of San Francisco. And so I'm home for about an hour, hour and a half. I've gotten back from my mom's, and I'm thinking about going down to Haight Street to get something to eat. But I linger for a while, and I hang out and talk to Jeff in the front room, and I keep sort of postponing going down to get something to eat, and finally I'm on the verge of going down to get something to eat, and the phone rings. And so it's a surprise. I didn't even know anybody had my number. And I go over, and I answer the phone, and there's this very lovely voice on the other end saying, "Is Jamie there?" And I said, "No, no Jamie here." I said, "You must have the wrong number." And she didn't hang up right away, and since she didn't hang up right away, I said to her, "This sounds long distance," I said to her. And I said, "Where are you calling from?" And she said, "Denver." And I said, and so you're calling for your friend Jamie in San Francisco?" She says, "Yeah, it's a friend of mine that moved out there a while ago, and I lost touch with her, and I really wanted to reconnect with her." I said, "Interesting, what's your name?" And she said, "Sue." So, now I must say, am I thinking, I do have a pretty rational, logical side to me, and I'm thinking, is this the Sue my mom meant? You know, is this the one? And I'm thinking, oh, I don't know, I can't, I'm not going to believe that, but I'm also thinking, is it not the one? And I'm thinking, no, I can't believe that either. And these are the thoughts that are going through my head as
right.
I hear that her name is Sue.
Right.
So we continue to speak, and we have this really nice conversation. And we end by saying, "Why don't you send a photo to me?" I said to her, "and I'll send one to you." And I gave her my address, and she gave me hers. And I went to a phone. I went to one of those, you know, booths in those days. You could have, I don't know if you find them very often these days, where you take one of those pictures in the little booths, and they're black and white, and it looked like it was this horrible picture, you know, just as dark and not the sort of grainy picture. And because I couldn't find one of myself, and I sent it to her, and she sent me this great picture of her in Rome, I think, in the you know, the Vatican City or something, with this beautiful background. Now, she sent me this lovely letter, some of the content of which, and my letter to her, is in the book.
Right.
And so I look at the photograph, and remember, we've already had a conversation, a long conversation, and I look at this photograph, and I realize that this, I mean, I just knew intuitively, instantly, on the deepest level, that this would be the person. There was a familiarity to it. There was something that, you know, you'd been here before. And so I knew that this would be the person that I would be with, that I would one day marry, that I would have a family with. I just knew it. And, you know, it just continued from there. And I flew to Denver. She flew here. She was in pharmacy school. She's a pharmacist. She'd ended up, by the way, she's a pharmacist. She's a scientist. And And so that continued.
So
went back and forth and saw each other, and eventually I did marry. We did get married. She is blonde. She does have blue eyes. She is light-complected. She is a scientist. Her parents love me. Her dad absolutely took to me and was quiet, the way she did. My mom described him.
Okay.
Her name was Sue, not Suzanne or Suzette or anything. Her name was, she went by Sue.
Okay.
Unbelievable to me.
All right, Bruce. So let's just leave it there for now. So, okay, so Sue is the woman that you married and had Michael and Jonathan with her. And this is the woman that you're now wrestling in throughout this book, these 2 years. What do I do? I've been married to this woman for 25 years. So it's not, and you also say in so many times in this book that I will always love this woman, whether I'm go back to her or we decide to separate at some point and go our own separate ways and get divorced. I know that I am tied to her in some way, but I don't know if I'm meant to be with her for the rest of my life as husband and wife.
Mm-hmm.
And so the energy of Alma Lorraine seems to, your mother, seems to just pervade this book in so many ways, the same way that your love of sports and your perspective on politics pervade this book. I mean, I think one of the marvelous things is that you've chosen to write this book around 2007 is when we have the presidential campaign of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and John McCain and Mitt Romney, all of that, you know, these political contest and everything. And then the crescendo at the end of the book, the book ends in 2008 as Barack Obama becomes elected the 44th president of the United States. So, and then you also have, you were an amazing hockey player, as was your brother Jeff. And so we see you throughout all these different areas of your life as well. But I want to get back to Alma because I feel that somehow she's at the heart and soul of this book. And you say in the book, "My mother imbued within me from earliest memory a deep sense that God is available to me and that all one need do to hear his voice is to envision within our minds a candlelight burning brightly. This candlelight is the light of our soul, an eternal light, and that deep within the halls of man, all of mankind, there lies this eternal light, this everlasting light. The failure to perceive of this light is the failure. She taught to see oneself, for in seeing oneself one truly finds and hears the words of God. Envision a candle, she would say, and envisioning the candlelight in a moment of quiet, ask God what you need. He'll answer you. You'll hear him clearly." Yeah. So now I want to get back to that second unannounced angel. The same Jeff, the same apartment. You're now AKA Bruce Wong. You're working in Chinatown in San Francisco. You've done a couple of articles and been well received in a small newspaper in Chinatown. You're in graduate school in international relations studies, specifically focused on China. You bring that to this newspaper. That newspaper sort of doesn't work out. And then you go to their competitor. And that sort of is going. But then this very interesting gentleman kind of enters into the scene. And it's because of... so then you basically start selling ads for this same newspaper. And you start making a lot more money. But at some point you realize, you know, this isn't really for me. And you start looking somewhere else. But, mm-hmm. And then you start thinking about your roommate, Jeff. Mm-hmm. And then what happens that Jeff then sort of takes over in your stead, but mm-hmm. Jeff brings to your attention mm-hmm. something that changes your life forever?
Well, you'll recall that, that whole section on Chinatown is certainly entertaining and life-changing. But there was this man that who brought me, it took me from the journalist side of the newspaper over to the ad side and told me I had to be, since I was selling ads to, you know, for an Asian newspaper, I had to have an Asian surname. So we arrived at my name, Bruce Wong. So I was writing articles as Bruce Rosen and selling ads as Bruce Wong. And this person, was very colorful. I'll get to Jeff in a second. Very colorful. It looked like his nose had been broken a few times, missing his front teeth. He had a pipe dangling from his mouth all the time. He said his claim to fame was that he flew a Spitfire for the English Air Force during World War II. And he was a colorful guy, and anybody that reads the book will find that, you know, there's some background on my family in Toronto. That's actually a fascinating story. But he knew my family in Toronto, and when he realized that the people that he knew from Toronto that were well known in Toronto circles were my family, it made him, he was astounded. So we worked together for a while, and he was a slave driver in a way, but really taught me a lot and taught me about selling and brought out a certain part of my personality. So when I realized that this newspaper situation, selling ads as Bruce Wong, has, pretty much reached its course, and Jeff was a guitarist and a grad student, and guitar really didn't have any opportunity to make any money, barely making it. I introduced him to this man, Owen is his name, and Jeff took over where I left off. Well, shortly thereafter, maybe a few months later, we had arranged to have lunch one day, Jeff and myself. And during lunch, Jeff hands me a newspaper ad that this man, Owen, the one that from Asian Week, the one that had trained me and that was working with Jeff, had handed to Jeff. And he said, "Owen says you should call this because this is what you should be doing. This is the way you should go." Well, it was an ad to do to get into investments, and it was funny. It wasn't in the business section. It was in the sports page, and that's probably, it's interesting because we might not have seen it if it had been in the business section at that mm-hmm. time, but it was in the sports page, which was very odd, and that's where they ran the ad, and Owen had passed it on to Jeff, and Jeff had passed it on to me, and so I called on it, and it turns out that the person behind that ad was a friend of mine, a roommate in college at the at the University of California, Santa Barbara. We were roommates, and he was the one. He was one of the principals involved with this company that was expanding from Southern California to Northern California. And I found that out when I called the number and. Because this friend from Southern California that was in the bond business had been in touch with me occasionally and had been trying to get me into the bond business, but I was way too interested in doing the journalism, and I was working on I was Bruce Wong, and I was working on my master's in international relations. So now it turns out that this person is involved, is a principal in this company, arranges for me to have an interview, and I have the interview. They decide they want to hire me. I went out and, in those days, some firms would sponsor you to take this difficult, brokerage exam. And I went out and I wasn't with anybody this was a small little startup firm and they weren't going to sponsor you. You'd have to pass it on your own. So I went out and, found a tutor and a class, and I did pass it. And I've been in that business ever since.
Amazing, isn't it?
How it really is.
The smallest things can and really change your life.
That day, I mean, I never thought that my life, that I would be, I wasn't looking to be in the investment. It wasn't where I thought I would be going.
And that sort of seems like that's when things happen the most. It's like when we're not really sort of paying attention that the moment is ripe for something to come in.
So a great line by John Lennon, as we all know, you know, life is what happens when we're busy making other plans.
Absolutely. So now we get to the sadder part of the book where your mom, Alma Rush Rosen, passes away, and mm-hmm. there are a couple of plane flights back and forth up to where she's living in California. And you're listening on the headphones, and these words from, I believe it's REM, come through. Mm. I've watched the stars fall silent from your eyes. I'm breaking through. I'm bending spoons. I'm keeping flowers in full bloom. I'm looking for answers from the great beyond.
Right.
And throughout this book, you have a lot of different quotes from different music that you have loved over the years. But at the end of this book, we have this wonderful kind of happenstance. You've been working with this gentleman, Rabbi Alan Liu of Congregation
right.
Beth Shalom in San Francisco. You've just met with him because your mother's being buried, I guess, on Rosh Hashanah, the morning of Rosh Hashanah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is a Jewish high holy day.
Mm-hmm.
And so the night before, or day before, you're there with this gentleman, this rabbi.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling him all about your mother and basically unfolding the story of her life and mm-hmm. filling him with what he needs to know in order for him to write her eulogy.
Right.
And he calls you up late that night.
Right.
And says, you know, I really, actually during that day, he says to you, you know, now I have to leave because now I have to write my sermon for, you know, Rosh Hashanah.
Right. So
late that night, you get a phone call and he says, I'm really sorry to be calling you so late, but I've got something that I need to talk to you about. I think it's personal.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, oh, really? And he says, yes, I've just written my sermon for Rosh Hashanah, and I believe it's been hijacked by Alma Rose. So talk about that, and talk about the sermon, and if you could, talk about the John Muir.
Well, there's a great line in there. I wish I probably have to go thumbing through it to find it. But
okay, which one is it?
It's about the forest burning.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's like page. Where am I? Maybe I'm not there. Here it is. Page 584, 585, 586. If you can, you know, thumb and look, and you might.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Let's set it up and see if there's.
Yeah. Got about 4 minutes.
4 minutes. I'll try to run through it quickly. Rabbi Liu was unbelievable, incredibly intuitive, incredible rabbi. He passed a few years ago. An amazing spiritual leader, and I did consult with him during the period with M. And I will say that when I asked him about, I don't want to spend too much time, but when I asked, went through this wrestling period with me with M and what to do. And wondered whether I ever should have why my life took this turn. He said that it was a heroic move. You had to be true to yourself in that moment. You had to absolutely not, you know, be untrue. You had to remain honest and truthful and courageous in your own soul. And then it was time to break it off with M, and he said, and just as courageous as you were when you started, a step you had to take, you also have to be as courageous to break it off. So, you know, amazing person, and written a number of books on his own, and anybody can look him up, Rabbi Alan Liu. So we do the sermon. I mean, I tell him about my mom's life, and he calls me. He's writing the Rosh Hashanah sermon. He calls me late that night, and as you say, says, "Your mother, something happened here. I think your mother hijacked my sermon." I said, "Really?" He said, "Yes. I started writing a sermon, and it turned out to be so totally something else. And I think your mother took over my pen, and I'd like to be able to use this sermon. I'll call it Alma's sermon, and I'd like my Rosh Hashanah sermon to be Alma's sermon, and I will point you and your family out, you know, in the audience. But I want to make sure you're okay with it." And I said, "Oh, of course, absolutely." And I said, "Isn't it like I don't doubt for a moment that my mom took your pen." And he went on to describe, it was an amazing sermon, you know, had us in tears, had a lot of people just overwhelmed. And he talked about many things. And he asked me that evening, he said, "Did your mother ever read John Muir? Was she into John Muir?" I said, "Not that I really know of, but I'm a little familiar with John Muir, and her simplicity is very much like the simplicity of a John Muir." And he said, "Well, you know, there's so much that I want to say, and you'll hear tomorrow." And he went on and talked, you know, and wrote in Alma's sermon. So I don't think we have enough time to read a lot from the sermon, but
got about 1 minute. Well, if you could maybe just put the whole you know, concise.
Yeah.
What's happening? You've got these huge pine trees in the
right.
in the forest that he's observing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to read at the end just a couple lines from it. You know, yes. I mean, he talked about the pine trees burning, and when the pine trees burn, the cones will fall. And at some point in all of our lives, our trees, you know, we will be burning, and our cones will fall, and those cones falling are inevitable, and they're natural. And forests burn, and they give birth to new forests, and they give birth to new life, and it's inevitable. And then he goes on to say, "And Alma wants you to know this too. Alma wants you to know that the pain you are carrying in your heart is purposeful pain. And Alma wants you to remember that when your forest starts burning, and Alma wants you to know that your forest will certainly burn someday. And this is the last thing that Alma wants you to know." And he goes on with his sense of humor. "You may be amazed that Alma can still talk to you, even though she died sometime last week. But that's not what you should be amazed at. You should be amazed by the way your body works, by the love in your heart, by the fact that you can hear my voice right now and understand it, derive meaning and feeling from it. You should be amazed by the light in this room and the light around the bodies in this room and the light in your mind and the light in your soul. Parlor tricks shouldn't amaze you much. This life you've been given should amaze you more. Miracles are just distractions. Thus speaks the miracle, Alma."
Well, Bruce Rosen, thank you for being my guest today on Planetary Spirit and for writing such a powerful book. If you ever need me, I won't be far away.
And you can get it, I'll just say quickly, it's on Amazon and on the bookstores and on almarosepublishing.com, which is the website.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you again for being my guest.
Jeff, it's been great and a really insightful and incisive interview, very perceptive.
Glad you enjoyed it, and thank you again. And my guest today on Planetary Spirit was Bruce Farrell Rosen, the author of If You Ever Need Me, I Won't Be Far Away. And as he said, that is available through his website, which is almarosepublishing.com. That's www.almarosepublishing.com. So Alma Rose Publishing. And coming up, my guest will be Michael White, who is a out-of-the-body explorer as well as a channel and psychic. And I've spoken with him, and that will be a very interesting program, I know. If you're enjoying this program and would like to access past interviews, go to planetary-spirit.com for on-demand archives of past shows, where recent interviews are now available on the Planetary Spirit website. And be sure to sign up for the email list to receive monthly updates for who my upcoming guests will be, as well as the newsletter. And if you're on Facebook, be sure to like the Planetary Spirit fan page on Facebook as well. And so this is Jeff Ferranini of Planetary Spirit wishing you all a blessed day.